My name is Elaine from Portland, and I'm the facilitator for this workshop. The idea for this workshop comes out of my own experience and yearnings I've heard on meetings. For most of my life, and in particular during the 3 years in a sister program where I could never stay abstinent, I just wanted to be rescued. Since I was 11 years old, I was dieting and yo-yoing with all the emotional insobriety that goes with that. I wanted an easier, softer way out of my compulsion to eat. I wanted to be struck abstinent with the magic fairy tales so I could live in a right-sized body. I wanted to be shot with a magic bullet or medicine that would miraculously give me a normal appetite. And alas, it never happened. But I did find recovery, and so have our panelists today. We hope today's workshop will offer hope to our sisters and brothers struggling in and outside of the rooms, and that you will find some ideas for keeping your program green. The workshop will be divided into two halves. In the first hour, Mary B. from New York, Gila N. from Arizona, and Carlisa from Texas will offer their experience, strength, and hope for 12 minutes. Then we will take questions for the panelists until the top of the hour. And in the second half, we will hear from Karen G. from California, Stu G. from California, and Shannon B. from Florida, and we'll round out that hour with questions. I'll then turn off the recording, and we can exchange phone numbers. Mary B., would you like to press star 6 and start us off? You have 12 minutes, and I will give you a two-minute warning.
Hello. My name is Mary B. I'm calling from the East Coast. I mostly from New York City, but sometimes I'm in Vermont, like I am now. I really wanted to thank Elaine for asking me to speak, because it's really wonderful to speak on a certain topic and to have time to speak. So mostly I want to say what I would like to do is, like, the reason why I'm speaking is to help someone else, you know, and it will help me. I heard a really beautiful thing that not only does helping someone else help me, but I heard that helping someone else heals ourselves. And I have found that to be true. Often what I need, just by offering it to someone else in program, I will get it. And I don't know how that works. It's just a Murphy's Law, a paradoxical law of this program, which I've found to be true. And it's helped me many times when I'm out of depression, out of a lot of things, out of a negative feeling. This workshop is on Is There a Magic Bullet? And what I think about this is just this impatience for recovery to just occur. Or when I think about what an easier, softer way is to me today, it meant something different when I first came in. When I first came in, it was all about, it wasn't even like I wanted to be struck abstinent, because I didn't even know what that was. I just wanted to stop eating so much. I ate compulsively 24/7. It was killing me. I'm type 1 diabetic, and I was very, very ill. And it was starting to affect my life in a way that there were things I couldn't do anymore. And I started to crack up. and that's when I found how. Now, this is in the early 90s. There was no See How then. It was just How. But it was very similar to what we do today. It was a food plan based on 3 meals a day with no sugar or flour, or flour and sugar listed fifth as ingredients. Very similar to our food plan now. We were advised to take it to a doctor to approve, and I had to get it medically approved by my doctors. And it was making 3 calls a day. There was no phone bridge then. and there were no cell phones then. And there was, it was 3 meetings a week, and they were all in person where I was. So that's how I got abstinent. The easier, softer way back then meant, would mean picking up, like, let's say, the food plan and just following it and then being able to stop eating compulsively. And I do, I know that there are plenty of people who can't do that. I see many people using successful diets, or other means of food control. I may have my snarky little opinions as a food addict, but those are my opinions, and thank God I don't share them publicly. Our program, it's against our traditions, and there's so many good reasons for that. So I really don't bother diagnosing anybody else because I really do not know anybody else. I can't get inside their skin. I don't know people's genetic body shape, makeup. I don't know any of that. I do know we live in a society and a culture that plasters people, movie stars or what celebrities on the on magazine covers at the checkout aisle of any supermarket, which is my ironic place to place it, before and after pictures. Our society feels very comfortable judging people by what their appearance, what their body appearance is. And I do know we live in that culture, which is difficult, but which is challenging to live with just as for anybody in our culture. But when you're a food addict, it's really challenging. And I look at people and I can say, oh, that celebrity may look like they're suffering from food addiction. I really don't know. You know, I know for me, perhaps this is all I know, that for me, what helped me arrest the food addiction was this program, being able to talk to a sponsor every day, calling people 3 times a day, kept me out of the food. So it was like replacing a tool, because after all, food was a tool for me to cope with my life. That's what it was. It was a coping tool that didn't work anymore. It became much more important than actually living life. It accompanied me throughout my day, and I couldn't imagine putting it down. A crutch, whatever you want to call it, a dependency, all of those things. I didn't know any of this until I came in these rooms. But an easier, softer way, I guess, would be when someone first comes in, and it's like, oh, do I have to commit all my food, or do I have to weigh and measure all of it, or do I, what if I want more? What if I ate a little bit over here? What's the slip? And all of those things, I guess I would call them easier, softer way. I'm a little more gentler. I just think that's just learning what abstinence is, and learning that if you're a real food addict, that it's really hard to keep abstinent if you don't have a definition of abstinence, and if you're not following a discipline. But what makes it possible for me to follow that discipline is calling people 3 times a day and sharing it with my sponsor. Sometimes it can, I think it's a real different way of looking at it. You know, like you can look at it, one can look at it as a chore and like homework or as a restriction. But I wasn't taught it that way. Thank God I was taught when I first came in that it was spiritual because I could not stop. I didn't know how much was enough. I had no idea. I didn't know what a meal should look like. I had some idea, but I didn't know my stomach, my appetite, my ability to gorge myself was stretched so far that I couldn't go by feeling full. I didn't ever feel full eating. I never felt full. The more I ate, the less full I felt. And I would go to sleep because I might be uncomfortable so that I could get up and eat more. So for me, I was taught, and another thing I want to say is that it was very hard for me to make a decision. So the way I ate, and people ate differently, I would get up and get more and sit down back down and get up and get more. So I was always like, I would get a certain amount and then I would have to have a little more. I always had to have a little more. But it was a constant dance of changing my mind constantly. That's how I ate. So I wasn't really aware of the amount until much later in the day. And I would say, oh, wow, that whole jar of X is gone. Or, oh, wow, I ate my roommate's this or that. Oh, wow, that whole entire bag is gone. But because I didn't do it all at once with any consciousness, it was very up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down. So And in a way, it was like an attempt at making a decision. It was an attempt at controlling the amount that was going in that I didn't have control over. So when I came in, I was told that I don't have to make a decision anymore. I'm not the one making the decision. This cup and the scale are going to tell me that that's enough food, and that's what I'm going to eat. And there was a big relief in that for me, because I was exhausted. It was hard, and it's not like that tendency to want to try to keep bargaining and get more and more did not come up. It did. But then I was taught, well, that's what you use that phone for, is you call when you want to eat, and you say prayers when you're trying to, when you're with that food, you say prayers. So I was taught that, and I was taught that they were spiritual guidelines. So I really felt like very spiritual about the weighing and measuring, and giving me a guideline that I could follow that I knew was nutritionally sound and appropriate. Okay, so that's how I thought of Easier, Softer Way when I first came in. It was all about the food plan, you know, like, and then, you know, like needing to call people and feeling like, it was just following a new discipline and, you know, coming from no discipline around food. It was challenging. I was taught it was spiritual, which was wonderful, so that I could think of that while I was doing it. But that's what I thought, like, an easier, softer way is not following a food plan or trying to, you know, I've gone to regular OA at different times over my many years in recovery. And where people would come up to me and say, so you really don't have any sugar in there? And it was like, and I saw someone trying to manage a substance that's unmanageable. Because when I tried to manage sugar, it managed me. It was never the opposite. There's lots of metaphors, like
2 minutes.
Like getting into the boxing ring with the food. It's like, who's going to win? It's always the food. And I heard this, you know, like, if food is the answer to my issue, what is the question? Food is rarely the answer. That is a quick and easy answer if I'm going for food to help me feel better. But the question remains unanswered. The question is usually a spiritual one. I'm scared. I'm deeply uncomfortable. I'm impatient. I'm angry. I'm excited, whatever it might be. It's not the place to go to. It's not going to give me what I'm looking for. So it's not really an easier, softer way is what I guess I'm trying to say. And now what easier, softer way is for me, not easier, softer way. For now, what that means is avoiding how I'm feeling. So now it's all about, like, facing and embracing and accepting and acknowledging and nurturing how I'm feeling. I don't shove it under the rug. I don't shame myself for how I'm feeling. I try not to anymore. I don't tear myself down. I don't think of myself as entirely defective anymore, which is how I used to. I nurture what I'm going through, and a 12-step program has helped me do that. And that's like my next level, is that emotional sobriety. It's really attending to how I'm feeling and seeing what I need. And that's just all about facing what I'm afraid of, what I'm scared, you know, what I'm angry about, like facing it. I don't even want to say head on, because that sounds a little too aggressive, but just facing with compassion. And that is, it sounds like an easier, softer way, but it's the easier, softer way would be not facing it, you know, trying to whip myself into shape, trying to fix something about myself, you know. Now I just start out with acceptance. So I hope that was helpful. Thank you, Elaine. And that's all I have to say today. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mary. And again, we'll exchange phone numbers after the second hour. Our next speaker is Gila from Arizona.
Good morning, everyone. Gila, compulsive eater. Elaine, thank you so much for asking me to speak today. And Mary, I'm looking at my notes, and so much of what I plan to say you captured so beautifully, I guess, because there are a lot of similarities on our roads to recovery and through recovery. So I came into this program through another program after having some weight loss success, and but feeling miserable. And so for me, and that first, it was a 12-step program, and that first solution, it worked, but I felt like I had all the answers, which I didn't, so I didn't need anybody else's answers. And when I think about the topic of looking for that quick fix, the answers for everything, I think about the neighborhood that I grew up in. And in this neighborhood, the answers were all in a very small space. There was a grocery store. There was a Thrifty's, which had my favorite counter inside. There was, next to that, Elaine Bryant's for clothing. Next to that, there was a commercial diet center. And next to that, there was a commercial candy store. And next to that, there was a bank. So everything I needed was in one small spot. And this is where we spent a lot of time. And I thought that the answers were there. I tried some commercial diets after being in a 12-step program or sister program and found that, yes, I could get the weight off, but there was something else going on. And truth be known, it was traumatic early childhood experiences, which caused chemicals to fire in my brain and through my body, which, you know, when you're a six-year-old child, you don't really have a lot of resources. So I went to the only resource that was really available to me, especially being so close to, you know, a restaurant, a candy store, and a grocery store. That was my answer. The answer was food. That was the only way I knew how to deal with the pain. So when I got a little bit older and I had money that I could spend on these commercial diet centers and gyms because that was going to fix me, I realized that, yes, and like I, you know, similarities in our stories, I could get rid of the weight, but I couldn't get rid of the pain. And that is where the surrender comes in. I remember that probably the defining moment for me when I realized that I've tried these diets, they don't work for me, I'm desperate, I can't do this on my own. It's not even about the weight anymore. And for a long time, it wasn't about the weight. It was just really about wanting to have sanity in my relationships and with myself and being able to navigate in a world of people, places, and things that I cannot control. The only thing I could control was my food, or so I thought. The only thing I could control was myself, and I really wasn't doing a very good job of that. My brother passed away from our disease, and I remember, you know, thinking that was a good way to go because these commercial diets didn't work. That first 12-step program didn't really work for me. There's nothing left for me to try. And then I was found in a very compromising position with wrappers all around me, much in the way that my mother died, because she also died from this disease. Just feeling like there was no solution, and then I was 12-stepped into this program. And what I got to learn was that relief comes through surrender. It doesn't come through a pill. It doesn't come through hours at the gym. The only thing that corner was missing. it doesn't come through herbs or diets or anything like that. It comes through understanding that I have a disease, and the disease is emotional, physical, emotional, and spiritual, and that the solution is surrender. And so glad that we have this food plan, because right away there's a structure for what I do with my food, and then we have all of these other things, because you can't tell a person just stop overeating or just stop under eating. you can't just tell a person like that and they'll say, okay, no problem, I'll go with your plan. There has to be something else to put in its place. And so what do we put in its place? Well, you know, right off the bat and every day since, you know, 3 phone calls, reading and writing from the big book, giving service, even if it's putting chairs out in the beginning of a meeting. That was the best thing when my Saturday morning meeting went back face-to-face and we're actually using chairs and we have to put them out and put them away. Such a good feeling after the pandemic. All of those things, and then the key thing for me has been moving through not just one inventory, because I've done a number of inventories since 1997 when I first came into this program, and really kind of unpacking the reasons that I chose food, that it was a response to fear, that it was a response to anger, that it was a response to not knowing, not having any security. And gradually, my security moved from people, places, and things to a higher power. And it says in the 12 and 12 that belief meant reliance, not defiance. So how do you go from believing in a God that, you know, our biblical God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, if that is your belief system, to performing all those miracles in the past, to performing this miracle for me today, which, again, now was no longer about the weight, even though I was over 100 pounds overweight. I have a 102-pound weight change. So even though I was carrying around all that weight, I knew that it was only in part about my physical well-being, that it was much more a part of my emotional well-being. And how am I going to go from desperate and fearful to surrendered? And that is where the reading and the writing and the inventory comes in, and the inventories that I do today, because, you know, even though I'm in a healthy body and I have lots and lots of good days, situations can still be confusing and throw me off balance. But now I have things that I can do about it, like a 10-step inventory, making an outreach call, calling my sponsor and saying, hey, how would you deal with this? You know, what do you think about this? I don't have to do it alone. So one of the pieces of magic that I thought I had, you know, there's the diets and all of that, but just, you know, self-sufficiency. And self-sufficiency beyond getting myself dressed in the morning really didn't work for me. When I knew it all was when I failed to listen, was when I failed to grow. I couldn't really hear anybody anyway. Desperation brought me to my knees and changed that defiance to reliance. So when I get into a tricky situation today, along with making outreach calls, you know, I just ask for the next right move, which is really important. It's kind of like an abbreviated version of the Serenity Prayer. But I found that I can't just ask for the next right move and just magically, you know, it will magically come. Because very often the inspiration does come, but then the next step is willingness to follow through. And I've been in situations where, okay, yes, this is obviously the answer, and it's simple, but it's not easy. So the next request is, please, God, grant me the willingness to do this. I can't do it alone. I need each and every one of you to move through situations that are...
2-minute warning.
Fantastic. To move through situations that are scary or high emotions. Today, I'm so grateful that there's a word that I was on an outreach call recently, and this gal gave me this word that I will probably remember after I am done here, which really sums up what I have today. And it's basically a level of emotion that is really not too high and not too low. Because before becoming abstinent and before really surrendering, I was just going to say this one thing I probably should have said, 5 minutes ago, which is when I put down the food, I picked up rage. That's how I know it's not about the food. And I started behaving in ways that were unthinkable. This program enables me to behave in a way that I can be kind and understanding, and when I don't understand, I can ask questions and I can listen for those answers. And I would not be able to do this today if it was not for the structure of the program and the support to move through it, with the inventory, with giving that away, with the outreach calls. I'm kind of repeating myself, but I just want to drive it home that this is the easier, softer way. That's really it. We have a daily dose of recovery that's contingent upon the maintenance of a fit spiritual condition. So that from the big book, I can't forget. I have to wake up every day and pray and meditate, ask for the next right move through just the same way I did when I came in. When I fail to do those things,
time.
Thank you so much. And I'm failing to follow my higher power's plan for me. So I want to just thank you again for asking me to speak, and I look forward to hearing from everybody else. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Gila. Our third speaker is Carlisa from Texas. Go ahead, Carlisa.
Thank you, Elaine, for asking me into the panel. So I want to just qualify for a moment. The CEA How program is the only thing that has worked for me for weight, long-term weight management. I carried over 180 pounds excess most of my adult life, and it wasn't until I came into these rooms that I was released of that weight, physical weight bondage, and have been, and I'm just grateful for that. So on a physical level, this has been an amazing journey for me. I will be reverberating with what has already been talked about and probably what will be talked about, but I am also going to ask people if you want to kind of follow along with some of the language that I quote. Is from the big book predominantly, and from our wonderful CEA How pamphlet number 820, which is CEA How, both of which are CEA How approved literature. So before I start, I want to talk about a definition of compulsive eating that our founder, Ed F., I think, came up with, and he calls it one of the easiest and simplest definitions of compulsive eating, which is eating with guilt. Eating with guilt. Every bite I took prior to coming into the rooms of the 12 steps, CEA How specifically, now over 12 years ago, going on 13, was always debated. Always, okay, I shouldn't have eaten that. Why did I eat that? I can't do that, eat that next time. There were very few bites that I ever took that I did not experience the feeling of I've broken an either external rule or an internal rule, which is what guilt is for many, the definition of guilt, that somehow I've broken the rule again. I can't do this. I can't do it. And then the dog, barking dog in my mind would just say, you got to do better. Just, put it down. You don't have willpower. You know that. Why do you even try that? And all of this barking that goes on with, in my mind, as a compulsive eater. So eating with guilt is a wonderful definition. And in the same pamphlet, the founder, the writers, ask, why a weighed and measured food plan. That's what the whole pamphlet is about. And why a weighed and measured food plan is that it is the first time by agreeing to give this food plan, our tool number one, a try, why we give it a try, is that we are accepting the fact that I am no longer and have not been in control of what I'm eating for a very, very long time, and that someone, something outside of myself, I have to surrender that to. I have to give it away. I have to accept the fact that I am powerless. So I set up the definition. Now let's talk about this whole concept of ease and comfort. On the first day that I called into CEA Howe, I had was given the benefit of having the best sponsor for me at that time. I didn't know anything about the 12-step rooms. I just was clueless as to what on earth anything having to do with the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous would have to do with me. But I'd gone to the website, the CEAHOW.org website. I'd read our beautiful concept, which says, whose compulsion has reached a critical level. And I did know that much, that I was a compulsive eater. Every bite was always debated. Every bite was always filled with remorse, guilt, incomprehensible demoralization. Every bite. It didn't start off that way, but it certainly ended up that way. And so when that lady said to me to get the books, and then I told her, I said, listen, I don't have any willpower. She said to me two words, a little sentence, that freed me. It freed me. She said, well, it's good because you don't need willpower. And I said, oh, okay. I don't need willpower. I think whatever you tell me to do, I'm willing to do. But I did not have willpower, but I certainly had willingness at that point because my disease had beaten me into the ground. I was minutes away from a heart attack, according to my doctor. I was carrying all this excess weight. I had nothing but wonderful things happening in my life, but there was this one little area, that I felt out of control over. Need I say what that was? It was eating. So when that lady told me I didn't have to have willpower, I was so delighted. And I guess now that I've been around the rooms a few 24 hours, I guess she was delighted too. Because what I was really saying is, I know I am powerless over food. And if I can say that, I am at the bottom of step one, lifting my foot up to then admit unmanageability because of my disease. So that's how this willing, my acknowledgement that I don't have any willpower, but I did have lots of willingness. I was willing to do anything that lady said, and I did. Whatever she told me to do, I did it. I didn't question it. I didn't care nothing about what other people were doing. I knew that I needed to do what she had because she had something that I didn't. She could go for more than 20 minutes without picking up sugar. She could go for more than 20 seconds without picking up sugar. And before I came in to see how I could do neither of those. So it was just a simple basis of identifying on the most simple way. So one of the things I really want to emphasize is something that I'm learning to do more and more of every day, identify in with the stories that we share with each other, that sometimes I had gotten into the habit of turning on meetings and I wasn't listening closely. I was, you know, letting personality, my stuff, get in the way of what I was hearing. And I finally took a tool that one of our beautiful fellows always says, I take notes at the meeting. And that has helped me identify all the way in to whatever people are talking about. I don't want to compare out. A lot of people have said to me, to my face, I don't have 185 pounds to lose. which is really saying I'm not that bad. And look, I'm not that bad got me up to 365 pounds because I would lie and deny my how serious my problem was. You know, oh, I'm not that bad. Oh, I haven't had, it's sort of like if you're an alcoholic, you'll identify, I haven't had a DUI yet. Oh, I haven't, you know, my family hasn't put me out in the streets yet. So this is what identify in, you know, do some self-diagnosis, which I will keep it simple by referring to the book at page 31. We do not like to pronounce any individual as alcoholic, but you can quickly diagnose yourself. Step over to the nearest barroom, cafeteria, buffet. Try some controlled drinking, eating, whatever. Try to drink, eat, and stop abruptly. Try it more than once. It will not take long for you to decide if you are honest with yourself about it. It may be worth a bad case of jitters if you get a full knowledge of your condition. And so that's what the book says. I don't get to diagnose other people. It's not my business what other people are doing. You know, it's not going to work if I know, oh, I think they're compulsive eating, they could benefit from this program. Mind my business. That has been the greatest gift that this program has given me. Stay in your lane, Carlisa, because you have enough to do, sweetheart, just doing your thing. Okay? So now I will shift to the ease and comfort. So my disease, according to the doctor's opinion, is twofold, and the solution is one. The twofold nature of my disease is I have a physical allergy, thank you, which is activated when I take sugar into my bloodstream. However, I also have a mental obsession, and I will eat and drink because I like the effects of it. And the effect that I'm looking for is when I'm restless, irritable, and discontent, I will pick up that substance to feel better about myself for ease and comfort. So that ease and comfort is what the founders later talk about when they say we look for an easier, softer way. That is a symptom of my dis-ease. I'm going to look for an easier, softer way. So to expect myself to somehow be cured of compulsive eating or not have these compulsive thoughts is not a full understanding of my disease. Like, that's my take on it. I don't understand fully that I have an alcoholic mind. I have an obsessive mind, an obsessed mind with food. But one day at a time, and this is the solution. There is a solution, and it's a spiritual one for me. And it doesn't claim that I have to believe the same higher power that anybody else is. I can take the group as a higher power and work the steps and the traditions and try to become into harmony with other people one day at a time. So the work is to do, you know, the work is the work. And if I do the work, I get the thing. And I think that is about all I had to say. And thank you for asking me, Miss Elaine, and I hope everyone has a great day.
Thank you so much, Carlisa. And now I would like to first open our space together for questions to our panelists. And then if we've exhausted the questions, perhaps then we can have shares from other people on their own journey, 3-minute shares, for an easier, softer way. So to begin, would someone like to press star 6 and ask a panelist a question?
This is Paul from New York. It's not a question, but just a share of gratitude to hear such refreshing take on our recovery and just hearing new voices and just having to hear just things that we haven't heard in a while and just hearing them in such a beautiful way. I'm just grateful to be here and experiencing that gift of your shares, and we'll continue to listen to the end. Thanks again. Paul from New York.
Amen, brother. Indeed. Why don't we just open it up? There wasn't a clamor to ask questions, so let's open it up for people to share three-minute timeshares, and you can ask a question or share your own experience, strength, and hope regarding the quest for an easier, softer way. Press star 6 to unmute.
Hey, this is Shannon from Florida, compulsive eater, and thank you, three, for sharing that each one of your stories. Every time I hear speakers or attend a workshop, I just find more and more gratitude and experience that helps me to continue within this program. My question is, how do you involve your family when or if they don't need to or don't want to eat the way our program wants us to do, abstinent, I guess.
So the question is, how do you basically deal with your family that may not be on the program? Do any of our panelists want to address that initially?
I'd like to address it. This is Gila.
Go ahead.
Compulsive eater. Can you hear me? Okay, good. It's such a good question because, you know, most of us live with other people who eat differently and who, you know, and who have lived through times when we have been maybe at our worst in the way we have behaved. And so I have a 15-year-old at home, and she has seen me go through waves of recovery and disease, sometimes will question me about what I'm doing, and you know, has even said, must be time to get to a meeting. And she has been coming to meetings with me on and off, not recently, but, you know, since she was in the rear-facing car seat, so for a really long time. And so I take her concerns and questions with seriousness, and I have told her that my recovery is absolutely my responsibility, and I don't want it to be a burden for you. And in terms of the practicality of having the foods of other people in the house, you know, my daughter bakes and she cooks and she is amazing in the kitchen, and that food is not mine, and that's okay, unless she makes something that is abstinent and I have a chance to commit it to my sponsor. And I'm okay with that. What makes it easier for me is that I work my program day in and day out, so it's never a question. So in terms of, I mean, it's never a question about whether that food is mine or not. I have what I have. It's committed. It's weighed, measured, and committed. And so that's never been a problem when I've been spiritually connected. It has been a problem when I have strayed, to be very honest. So I guess, you know, I think for me, just really taking questions and concerns seriously and talking about it, talking through them one by one, and letting our family know that we value them and we are doing everything we can to be sane inside so that we can be, you know, present in our own lives and present for them. I recently gave up caffeine like about last December. And my daughter sometimes will say to me, even today, she'll say to me, you know, I thought you'd be more upset about that. Or I thought you'd be more excited about that. And I love having an even keel emotion, range of emotions. It's not highs and lows that are so dramatic, but it's much more predictable and calm. And because she has seen that change, her accepting of the structure of my program is a lot better. She understands when I need to go to a meeting. She understands when I need to take an outreach call. And that just takes time. It takes time for our families to look and see that what we're doing is working for us, and it's also making the home a more hospitable place to be. And with that, I will pass.
Thanks, Gila. Would someone else like to address
that? Can I share on it? Can I share on it real quick?
Please go ahead, Paul. Yes.
Thank you so much. When I came in to CHEL 18 and a half years ago, my mother was in the hospital with a heart attack, my father with a stroke, and I had diagnosed cancer. I had to work on my cancer topically, but I talked to doctors religiously about how I could go inside out. And they said the idea of giving up sugar and flour, which is the fuel of most cancers, is a big success. And so it was interesting that when I went to visit my mother and my father in the hospitals, both the recovery rooms for the doctors were maxed with sugar and flour, that they weren't even listening to their own medicine, that I just luckily got the doctor that gave me the best information, you know, eat more, weigh less, no sugar, no flour, anything white. I've also given up coffee. And what I've experienced with my family, especially my mom and dad when they were alive, was to be a power of example. And I never forced anything on them, although they would always be looking to see what I was eating. And my Tupperware became, you know, number one. What's he got? What's he got? What's he got? And they would have tons of food around them. But it wasn't really food. What I had was sustenance. And lastly, they were very good about during the week of following my plan. But on the weekends, they were back to the races. And sadly, you know, between cigarettes and everything else, I lost both of them. I'm just grateful that I claim my seat. Thank you.
Thanks, Paul. Is there somebody else who would like to address the issue of using program, or how do you explain program to families or incorporate families into what we do? Or you may want to just talk about your own experience in trying to find an easier, softer way.
Hi, it's yes. Mary. I would like to talk about the family and your food and also just the easier, softer way, because I think that it does tie together because so this is Mary. I spoke first, and I'm also type 1 diabetic, so I've got type 1 diabetes. I have to match what I eat with the insulin I take in, and it takes up about 30% of my day. I wear an insulin pump, and it's all according to carbs, and, you know, I have to figure all this out. And so, but I have a 9-year-old son. I've got a husband. We just had a bunch of guests over the past month, and I was working full-time also. And I think that sometimes it can just feel, you know, and with children, it can just feel easier, you know, to just, okay, you know, because sometimes it can seem easier. Like, and a lot of kids' meals especially, there's like never, you know, vegetables are not like the big part of the meal, you know. It's just this assumption, and that's a lot of the foods that we avoid that are very addictive for me. But I have found that I don't need to make people do what I do, or I don't need to make people understand really what I do in order to be abstinent. And in the home, especially, I mean, it's been many years. My husband does cook. He cooks dinner usually. He always makes a huge amount of vegetables. My son does eat vegetables. You know, it's just become a normal thing, is that that's part of your plate. And we just had a bunch of kids over recently who were staying with us who weren't required to eat vegetables. He's kind of required, but it's in the sense that, like, that's part of your dinner, you know. but I don't know. I mean, I know that that can be a really stressful thing. But I do know that when I first got abstinent, I thought that everyone around me had to change how they ate in order for me to maintain my abstinence. I know at first it can be really scary and feel really, really hard to say what you need and to refuse food when someone has prepared something especially for you. Like, oh, but I made this for you and it doesn't have this, 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 and this. Or it has this new sweetener or whatever, you know. And you know, it's not that I don't eat the, you know, it's just that I don't eat that thing or I don't eat extra, you know. I just eat what my meal plan is. Whatever reason it is, it's hard, but I just feel like I don't have to explain to everybody my food addiction in order to maintain my absence. That's also just been a part of, like, a boundary. Like, sometimes it's not safe to explain, you know. I don't need to tell people I'm in 12-step recovery from food addiction. There's a lot of opinions out there about that that I don't really want to wrestle with. When I'm out to dinner, for example, it's not really something I want a large group of people to be discussing. You know, most people who are interested in what I'm eating might just be a passing interest, or they may have some issues with food themselves, but it's really not the same as, like, food addiction, you know? And if someone wants to really talk to me about it, I might say, you know, we can, you know, if you really want to talk to me about this later, that'd be great. You know, or I have found ways of, like, diverting attention. Sometimes I have found that when I'm out, I will ask people about themselves because people really like to talk about who they are. People, you know, like to connect, and they like it when people are interested in who they are. I've used that tool when I'm out to dinner with a lot of people. That's been really wonderful. And it's also, like, a way I can be of service, is just being interested in other people. Because I know how I feel when no one ever asks me anything about who I am, you know. And I know that's like, but I don't necessarily want to talk about my food addiction because it's just not always safe. So I find that if I talk about it with a sponsor and with other Sea House fellows and get some ideas, I feel a lot more comfortable going to any social situation with food. That was all over the place, but I'm going to shut up now. Thank you.
This is Martine Fiala. Can I share?
Yes,
well, I came into the room of how in 1997 I weighed almost 400 pounds. As far as the only people, you know, I have an autistic daughter, and she's been in the program with me for 24 years. My husband's been in the program with me for 24 years. And I'm married to a husband who's never called me fat. He's loved me regardless. And he's always been, you know, when I was into his food, he always just said, you know what, it's okay, I'll just go buy more. But when I came on, you know, I was I was dying from diabetes. I weighed almost 400 pounds, and I am a type 2 diabetic. And it's so interesting. They've been on board forever. My daughter was... She was 12 when I came into the program, and she's watched me and grew up in this program, and she's so funny. And my husband has always been supportive. I think that my outside friends, you know, that aren't in the program or understand the program, I don't feel a need to explain what I'm doing. But they've watched me, and they see that I walk the walk and I talk the talk. I've worked with sponsees who are chronic slippers. And I think chronic slippers suffer more from criticism with their family because they're on again, off again, on again, off again. You know, wanting to go to restaurants where, you know, it's abstinent food, then picking up somebody else's food while they're there. And then they're off and running again, and they want to go to places, you know, that, you know, everybody else in the family. Then all of a sudden, they, you know, and so I've seen that, the yo-yo suffer. You know, my sponsees with attitudes, but I have, you know, stayed the narrow course. And my husband, he looks through the fridge every day and checks all my abstinent food and goes out and buys it before I, you know, even realize that I need it. I've worked this program for a long time, and I used to be what was called a 24/7 emergency sponsor, where you're available 24/7 for any emergency. And he's been with me, getting phone calls at 4 o'clock in the morning, getting phone calls at 6 a.m. In fact, I remember I'd been in the program about 4 or 5 years. And he, as he was getting older, you know, he would come in and he would be just exhausted. But I was like, into every single drama, and I would just blah, 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 and he'd come in and say, no, honey, I can't hear what you're saying. Why don't you get on the phone, Bridge, or get one of your favorite people and tell them what you're up to and what's happening. And then maybe when we lay down for a nap, I can listen then. And that was a really loving thing. What's really funny is that my husband knows what I need to eat. I think the hardest thing was when we went to restaurants, it was the people who struggled with their own weight and had issues with their own weight and was compulsive eaters that would get angry with me. And the people who really, the people who really understood didn't. And my daughter is so funny. We go to a restaurant and she's always asking them, just asking them. My mom's, food addict, But yeah, they've always been really supportive. I've not struggled with that. Thank you, Elaine. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. We have 2 minutes left till the top of the hour. Is there somebody else who would like to lend their voices?
This is Cheryl, mm-hmm. Compulsive Eater.
Go ahead, Cheryl.
Hi, Elaine. And this wasn't always the easiest, softer way, especially when I had to explain what it was doing, what I was eating. Today I have no problem. I mean, people know. But at that point, it was like, I don't want to tell anybody else because now they're going to say, oh, no, she's starting something and she's going to fail at it again. So that was a little tough. But more importantly, when people would ask me, well, what are you doing? How'd you lose the weight? And I'd go, oh, my God, I got to tell them everything about program. No, I don't, Or I would say, I'm avoiding sugar and flour and quantity. And then at one point I decided, I don't care what people think or say. All I need to say was if you're interested, come with me to a meeting, and we'll discuss it. I remember one time going to a very elegant wedding, and I took we shouldn't mention food, and along with me, and I poured it into the fancy soup thing, and like people, what is that? And then I was sort of welcoming questions. I was so unafraid, but today I know that the only way that I can do that and have somebody really understand what's going on is if they come to a meeting, listening on the meeting on the phone bridge, and then they get it. Either they do or they don't, but they have an idea of what it is that I'm doing. Grateful to be here, and thank you so much for this wonderful workshop. I'm Cheryl. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Cheryl. And now at the top of the hour, for those of you who might just be joining us, this workshop is focusing on, is there an easier, softer way? And our first panelist in the second half will be Karen G. from California. Go ahead, Karen.
Thanks, Elaine. Thanks for the opportunity to be of service today, everybody, and thank you to the panelists and participants before me. I am a compulsive eater and bulimic, gratefully recovering in this program. Today, I've got 1 year and 1 month of, let's try that again. I've got 1 year and 1 week of a recommitted abstinence in this program. And then just briefly to give you all a little bit of an idea about my background, I'm coming up on 5 years in CEA HAL. Since December of 2016, I've been maintaining over a 50-pound weight release. It's currently about 65 to 70 pounds of weight release that I've been maintaining. Prior to coming into CEA HAL, I had spent several years in Overeaters Anonymous. I had a good run of about 9-10 years in OA. Then I was in relapse for almost 5 years before making my way back to the rooms of recovery, and then coming to CEA HAL by way of OA again. What I wanted to talk about today, my interpretation of an easier, softer way, has to do with half measures. And I really thought initially when I was asked by Lane to speak on this panel that it was going to be sort of like this before-after kind of situation, where we show, sometimes we'll go to convention and we'll project our before picture, and then, here before you is Exhibit A, here's fellow, Jane or John or, and here's how they look today and here's how it was and here's how it is. And unfortunately for me, it's not that cut and dry. There's no before and after because as we hear, we need to take that tiger out of the cage 3 times a day. And so I am up neck and neck in my addiction every day, multiple times a day, and I am only granted relief if for a 24-hour period, based on doing this work, based on that, the maintenance of a fit spiritual condition, as fit as I'm able and willing and open to letting it be for today. And so it's not like, before I came to HOW, you know, here's my suffering, and now here's my freedom. Because the truth is that, you know, here I am today, almost 5 years into the program, with 1 year of abstinence. But I do feel like every bit of new awareness that has come to me through my slips, through my recommitments, they are so instructive. And hopefully, if you're new or if you're coming back and you're on the line today, please see if there's something in this story for you. So just half measures. You know, one of the things that began to happen to me because I hit my maintenance weight within a few months of coming into program, probably because of the compulsive manner in which I approached the food plan to begin with, and I'll come back to that, I'll circle back to that in a bit. Because of that, it for me, and because of my other character defects of egocentrism and judgment and entitlement and all of those other things that come up, it became easy for me at some level to rest on my laurels in this program. And so how do we keep it green? How do I avoid complacency? How do I make sure to not sink into half measures even when I'm working the CEA HOW plan, even when I'm working my daily tools? How do I make sure not to do that? And I think really what it comes down to most of all is the H in HOW. H, honesty. That's the very first of the 12 principles of AA. And recognizing that so often, the biggest deception in my life is not deception of others, it's deception of myself. And so am I willing today to really just say, higher power, I am fully surrendering to whatever you have in mind for me today, and I am praying for the willingness to listen and follow that. And part of that also means being totally willing to look at what my behavior is. So what I'll tell you that I was doing before I recommitted my abstinence last year on July 11th was that I was eating food that I cooked, and that's just the honest truth of it. I love to cook. I've always loved to cook. I prided myself on being the person who knew good food. You know, I was never like, you know, oh, this person at the corner, this or that, just grabbing, you know, the 99-cent special. I was a gourmet, so on and so forth. These things I like to think about myself. And so I like to prepare fine food. And my perfectionism said that whatever I prepared had to taste exactly just so. And so I was eating the food while I made it. I called it tasting. I called it seasoning correcting. But really what I was doing is I was eating food. And when I'm putting food into my mouth in between my three weighed and measured committed meals a day, I'm not being abstinent. And so I got to look at that. And I didn't even realize it. I didn't even realize it until one day I had a sponsee who talked about she was going to an orchard to pick fruit with a friend. And what she was going to do to make sure that she didn't try anything that she picked. And all of a sudden, the awareness came to me, 4 years into my abstinence or whatever it was. Well, wait a second, I always taste the fruit when I pick it. Well, tasting is eating. So anyways, just starting to get honest. And so then I had that honest conversation with my sponsor that I had been doing this, and we acknowledged that this is not abstinence. Bites, licks, and tastes are food. So, yeah, you know, I'm grateful that I was able to acknowledge that, and I was grateful that I was able to adjust course and program, and I'm grateful that I have this opportunity today to speak about that. So half measures, not being fully honest, those are the things that interfere with my sobriety, that interfere with my serenity. They also prevent me from getting to feel like an honest, authentic, transparent person of integrity. One of the things that I
so value about being able to stand up and say, you know, I'm Karen, I'm a grateful recovering compulsive eater and bulimic, and today I have X number of days, is that I know that I can stand behind that. I am honoring what I said I would do. When I give my food to my sponsor and I eat those things, I'm honoring my word. I'm giving power to my words. And I think that that's the other thing, too, is this paradox of power, powerlessness leading to power. And we talk a lot about that, that somehow or another, through the surrender, through that daily surrender, you know, getting on our knees in the morning and just saying, higher power, I am powerless over people, places, things, and situations. And through that surrender, somehow or another, there's empowerment in my life. And so the easier, softer way is the way that I get to live my life as long as I am practicing surrendering and surrendering to this program and doing my tools every day and doing them to the best of my ability, as honestly and as willingly as I can. A lot of the freedom and ease, that softness that comes to me, comes from letting go of the rigidity and letting go of the negative thinking. Part of that is letting go of the number on the scale, which has been a lifelong battle for me. I have been so concerned with the number on the scale, both outside and inside of the room. And so the freedom from having to be at a certain number on the scale and just trusting, okay, God, if I eat this way, I trust that you will make me right-sized. I trust that you are creating for me a life physically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually, that's the life that I'm supposed to live if I lean into it. And so I'm really starting to recognize how wonderful it feels to just travel light, to travel without those negative thoughts. I heard earlier from one of our panelists this idea that we alone as compulsive eaters actually experience guilt over what we eat, guilt and shame. And if you're a person who has experience with restriction or with purging, you also know, too, how it feels, the feeling of fraudulence. And what I get to practice today is what you see is what you get. And not everybody's going to like what I have to sell today. And, you know, acceptance means me being okay with that. I get to be easier.
2 minutes.
Thanks. I heard that 2 minutes. I get to be easier and softer with myself today. This week, my weight is up almost 2 pounds in maintenance. And I get to come onto this call and come onto this panel and not feel like a failure. Why? Because I know that I weighed and measured my food this week. And I also know that I am not my weight. I'm not going to say, hi, I'm Karen, and I am, and then put a number. I am not the number on the scale. My body weighs that this morning. And I am a compulsive eater in recovery. I'm a parent. I'm a fellow. I'm a person who provides service. I'm a sponsor. I'm a sponsee. I'm a daughter. I'm a mother. I'm a wife. I'm a worker. I'm somebody who is useful today. And I'm grateful for all of those things. And somehow or another, when I am rigorous and honest in my program, when I do that work, all kinds of space opens up in my life and power and ease. And I don't know why it works, and it doesn't make any sense that it works. And when I'm fighting this program, and when I'm resenting this program, and I shouldn't have to, then it doesn't feel easy. But when I just surrender, I accept that I'm a compulsive eater. I've always been a compulsive eater. I'll always be a compulsive eater. There's no pink cloud in my life. Sometimes I ride that wave and things feel like effortless with program, and sometimes it feels like it's work. At the end of the day, I get to have freedom and ease in my life. I get to experience softness, freedom from negative thinking, freedom from self-criticism, freedom from judgment of self and others. I get to be available today for my recovery. I get to be available today for relationship, and I'm grateful to have been asked to be of service today. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Karen. Our next speaker is Stu from California. Go ahead, Stu.
Good afternoon, ladies. I'd like to first thank Elaine for asking me if I'd like to volunteer to be part of this committee. And I'm really very honored to be here. I have to first start off by saying two things. One, I am a compulsive eater and always have been since the age of 4, and I'm 74 now. And I am a type 2 diabetic. These are two things I cannot change for the time being. They're with me. And I've been on this program for 14 years, 3 months, and 25 continuous days. I've lost 191 pounds in this program. I'm a food, inventory, and step sponsor at the present time. And I have to start off by saying the comic strip Dennis the Menace used to have one thing he used to say to his friend, if I knew then what I know now, life would be a hell of a lot different for me. I've had health issues where I've had to have both my knees replaced, the right side, my right knee, 4 times already. I had space knees and regular knees and lots of time in the hospital for that stuff. It just never has been good for me. And my family, well, my topic I'm picking up is In Search of the Magic Bullet. In our case, with my wife also is on the program the same length of time as I am. She came home one day from work and said to me, guess what? We're doing another diet. I said, what? This is before CHOW. And we went on the CHOW diet food plan. Excuse me. It's not a diet. It's a food plan. We put the house on a diet. Everything in the house that was no good to eat anymore for us, we threw it out or gave it away to neighbors, my son, and other people. We just cleaned the house up to get rid of all the garbage and food from the house. Because we found out that if we don't have it in the house, we can't use it. We won't try and use it. I've had a number of other programs we've been on. We've been on diets, which were only are called diets. I could tell you, Jenny Craig, Weight Watchers, Herbal Life, and a few others. If I had the money that I spent on all these diets, I'd have the Rolls Royce in my driveway right now instead of the other car that I have there now. And I've had a lot of service jobs in CHOW. I've been the chairperson of Southern California in a group, Area 1 member. My wife has done the same stuff as I have. It keeps us on our toes, keeps us going strong. And I have lots of friends in the program. And I had usually I had some sponsees who once slipped on me. He just slipped and wouldn't call me up anymore. And I'm good friends with Ray Z at the time, who was the co-founder, and I asked Ray, what do I do about this, Ray? And she says, you cannot control anybody else if they want to slip and eat other food. You can't hold their hands. You can't twist their hands. This is their program. And they want to do it the right way, they'll do it. If they don't want to do it, then you have to go on with your program and just stay with the food as you have to. And when I've been in the hospital, I had to tell these people in the hospital what I cannot eat and what I can eat, and they kept giving me the wrong foods. You name it, that's what they gave me. I just said, get it out of me. Get it out of my way. My wife had to come into the hospital and bring me safe foods because I couldn't eat anything they were doing for me at the hospital. Because they didn't understand, people still don't understand what a compulsive eater is like. And some of the nurses were a little bit needed the program also. And one of my adopted sons, I went to his family's party. And we told him what we needed to eat. So we got there, we said, is this all legal for us? He says, as far as I know it is. And he asked his father-in-law. And the father-in-law sent somebody out to bring back more food that we knew was safe for us, and that way we were able to eat. So family members do help us out. and my son. You know, when my first granddaughter was born, he says, will you join us in the bubbly? I said, Poppy, I said, Dad, Jared, would you be insulted if we don't and drink a glass of water instead to celebrate my granddaughter's birth? He says, no, that's fine, Pop. And when she turned 4 years old, we had a birthday party in our backyard for her and had lots of good food that we all could eat. And the one thing we couldn't eat was her dessert. And they gave her a piece of that dessert to eat, and she stood up, and she was 4 years old, and says, I can't eat this. It's got sugar and flour in it, and Poppy and Nanny will not eat it, so I will not eat it. And I said, Jaylin, it's your dessert, so you could eat it. No, Poppy, I won't eat it. And she insisted on that as being, well, it ain't good for my Poppy and Nanny, it ain't good for me. And that's what she put up with by saying that, which I think is kind of cute. It's a four-year-old saying that. Need for the other thing we also have is a good support system, because with my wife on the program and me on the program at the same time, she could wake me up at 4 a.m. and say I have an urge to eat, and I'll tell her drink a glass of water and go back to sleep. You just can't do it. Don't worry about it. We've had people actually call us up at 4 o'clock in the morning, asking us problems and questions, and we had to answer it for them because it's a compulsive eater's problem, and we're in CHOW, so we help people in CHOW do that. We get a lot of family support from my son and my daughter-in-law and a lot of other members of the family who know what we're on because they know what we're faced with. As a type 2 diabetic, that doesn't go away from me no matter what. I had it one day where my sugar level dropped so bad because I take my sugar level testing. I had to call up support people to find out what I can do. Couldn't get anybody on the phone. My wife found somebody who could help us, and she told me what to eat to get my sugar back up. I said, you crazy? I'm an overeater because of that particular item. So she had to come up with something else for me to survive on. And then she called me back saying, are you okay now? Yes. Even my first sponsor, who was also a diabetic, and I couldn't get him on the phone either, but when I got him on the phone, I explained to him what happened. I said, did I have a slip just now? He says, no. It's a medical necessity to keep your sugar level at a normal level, so you did not slip. And being Jewish, I have a thing called a holiday where I cannot eat, the Yom Kippur. So I couldn't eat for that day. So I had a meeting the day before, and everybody at the meeting, also in CHOW, said to me, well, could you eat more food the night before to make up the difference? I said, no, I'm only allowed X amount of this, that, and the other thing. How could I eat more of something if it's only allowed a certain amount? And they realized what I was saying, because they never dealt with that kind of a problem before. I also walked into a supermarket, and one of the members in the program was in the supermarket, and she said to me, hi, Stu, you remember me from so-and-so meeting. And I was in the middle of the supermarket. I said, no, I don't know who you are. I have no idea what it is you are, but I don't know who you are. I walked away. I had to explain to her afterwards, you can't mention that we're a member of CHOW like that in public. It's not that kind of an organization. And she realized that she had made a big mistake by saying anything. But that was something I had to deal with. And like I said, we've been on many diets. And none of them really work. They seem to work, but they never do. I've gone through hypnosis, chiropractors. Like I said, I've been on many diets. I also had, any time I lost weight, when I was losing weight, I got rid of all the old clothes. I kept nothing of what I used to have in clothes because I was afraid I'll get the weight back on and put that clothes back on. My son used to do volunteer work at up in L.A. to feed the homeless. And he wanted us to join him. And we did. And we're serving food for these people. And this guy walks by with this white sweater. And I looked at Steffi. I said, Steffi, that looks like my old sweater. But I'm not going to ask this guy that because he'll think I'm trying to steal his clothes. I'm sorry?
2 minutes.
2 minutes.
Oh, okay.
You have 2 minutes left.
Okay, he'll probably think I'm trying to steal clothes off this guy. But no, I'm not. And like I said, it's a program that does work if you want it to work. There's always light at the end of the tunnel when you use a See-How program because it does work. It will save your life. It saved my life, my wife's life, and I can't stress it enough how much it has done for us. And like I said, my granddaughter, very funny. I won't eat it. Got sugar and flour in it. Poppy and Nanny won't touch it. So I won't touch it. To this day, she still won't eat the sweet thing like that. And both my parents, well, my mom was very short and fat. My dad was tall and skinny, like that that group. Never mind. I can't think of their names. Not Bert and Ernie. Something else. But like I said, this is a program that really does function. And if you want to stay on it, it will help you. And I'm so happy that we finally got into a food idea that does work. I've gotten rid of all the garbage we don't eat anymore, and I don't even miss it. That's the nice thing about it. And we also used to go with a little pocket scale and weigh our food in the restaurant because I never know exactly how much they're going to give you. And they look at me, but they tell me, hey, it's the amount you're asking for. And I said, okay. But every now and then we go to a supermarket, we have to measure, we have to look at all the items on the menu, the ingredients that we're looking at, to see, thank you, to see that it's all legal for us. Thank you very much, and thank you for letting me talk to you. Like an idiot.
Thank you, Stu, very much for your experience, strength, and hope. Our last speaker for the panel is Shannon B. from Florida. Shannon, go ahead.
Thanks so much. Woo-hoo. Man, in search of a magic bullet, fairy godmother, ruby slippers, is there an easier, softer way? You know, today I have each one of those. I met another gunslinger who shared this magic bullet of the foam bridge. My fairy godmother is my sponsor, and my red-bottom Louboutins are the tools of this program. I thank you so much, Elaine, for asking me to be the speaker and to take us out. There are so many firsts for me in this CA How program. I've never been a panelist before. Pretty neat. I was graciously invited to attend the Foam Bridge in May 2020 through the beverage program. I was consumed by my obsession in January 2021, and after hundreds of days of abstinence, today the number of days is not my lifeline. I recommit my abstinence every day. This beautiful, enlightened program guides me to be the best version of myself today. I feel and think all the negativity that my disease imagines, things that drove me to food for safety, that I'm not alone. I'm not what I feel and think. I'm not that sad face in the mirror. And I'm not better than anyone else. So what are who I am? I'm one of many. I am loved by others and seeking love and affirmation from my higher power and implanting that love within myself. This is the easier, softer way for me because I love all aspects of food, from shopping to the prep to storing it, cooking it, composting, and today I'm learning how to grow some of my food. My tools are like a recipe that I didn't follow at first, a recipe that was overwhelming and complicated and some days forced. When I am feeling a certain kind of way, I take a moment to assess what I can sense or observe, all the God sparkles in my life, and then ask myself, am I taking my will back? Possibly. The future welfare of CAHOW is more important than any outside issue for me today. This program is demanding and relentless, but just like my dis-ease will be if I do it my way. Each one of us on this call and listening, each one of us on this call, listening to this recording, and those imagining a better life for themselves is worth a seat in this fellowship. We learn more about ourselves because we are cleaning the greasy splatters in the kitchen of our minds and sweeping all the strewn plastic packages in our hearts and our souls. The beginning is surrender, and obedience, and steps, but over time, as Bill said, in AA Comes to Age, I obeyed because I had to. I would have lost my standing in AA if I had not. After a while, I began to obey because I saw that the traditions were wise and right. Our traditions are an expression of the deflation that each one of us has to take, of the sacrifice that we shall all have to make in order to live and work together for others and at all the group levels. I am keeping off 20 pounds of internal insanity for over 9 months. It's a miracle. I had to surrender. I had to put no sugar and no flour first. I had to communicate this honesty with my family. I had to forgive myself for all the mixed messages my dis-ease created in my mind. I had to find a sponsor that speaks my language, the language of the heart. And what I heard today was stories of pain and suffering, hardship, tragedy, and all the opposites that are occurring today. From helping others to heal illness, a definition of abstinence, a constant dance, childhood experiences, relationships, surrender, the dis-ease as physical, emotional, and mental and spiritual well-being. Eating when each bite is filled with guilt and shame. Getting into the literature, and you don't need willpower to get here. Identifying with, taking notes, being part of, half measures, tasting equals eating, but powerlessness equals power. The imagination and wonder of prayer. The wonderful affirmations, I am worthy, and all the freedom that comes from that. hearing things about anonymity and service, the friends we make from this fellowship, going to any lengths, setting a good example for our littles. These are just a few of the stories and shares and wonder that this program has for us today. But we got to be in these seats. We've got to create this unity. And it takes each one of us, to push through those fears of being of service, not doubting that you're in the right place at the right time. Just forgiveness of self when you're not always focused, when you're not always perfect on the scale, and know that you're absolutely 100% not alone today. There are many aspects and many resources out there. Resources that work better for one and resources that help us all. This workshop is an amazing small part of a whole. And we need to continue to help each other through nervous times, help us through and give us advice on how we can commit and how we can just push through that fear of, well, I don't know what it's going to look like. Because I know today I feel so much better in a right-sized body. I love, love food. And that is a really hard dance. It's an everyday balancing act. But I have all the tools that I need, and I absolutely remain teachable in these moments. Thanks, Elaine. So that I can continue to grow. Because I know it's about progress. I know it's about this journey. And there are so many of us that are still out there sick and suffering. And we just have to keep this door open for them. We got to keep this phone line going. We've got to keep our share of honesty, of being open-minded. And for me, the most important part is the willingness to push through our own fears for others, to push through some of the chaos that can ensue preparing for not only just our food, but for outside issues. And we can do this hand in hand. And we can do this through these meetings, through following each tool one by one, and by sharing those experiences, the strength, and sometimes when we succumb to those fears and slip, it's vital. And I'm so glad to have been here. My name is Shannon, and I'm in Key West, Florida. And I wish you all the best days and wonderful abstinent moments that we continue to share today. Thanks, Elaine.
Thank you so much, Shannon. And now we will open the line again for questions to any of our panelists or your own contribution and experience strength and hope around finding an easier, softer way or some of the obstacles that got in your way. So is there anybody who would like to ask a question or share?
This is Paul from New York. I shared before. Do you want me to wait until the end?
Go ahead.
Well, you know, the easier, softer way is this program. There's no doubt about it. If you try to squeak this way or that way or up and down, you cause so much more trouble for yourself. But if you stay the course and you work this program as it is written, And there are some, you know, ways in which, you know, you can get around it if you really are desperate. You know, you have doctors that have written numerous opinions of how, you know, the plan should go. But I'm so grateful. I mean, I've always had the same plan since day one. It grew as I became a maintenance sponsor and in maintenance, but I still basically cover, you know, the food that is entitled to me and nothing more. I do want to say that when I go to the conference, I do hope to create an ad hoc committee that will identify all these fabulous new items that are out there that, you know, are not, you know, being looked at or recognized in our food plan. I'll just mention something, and it's not a food, but it's a product that we use to, you know, use as a substitute for sugar. That there are like 19 brands of stevia right now that are on the market, and all of them, as far as I can see, are banned. So if a group comes together and gets, you know, a lot more look-see to see if there's anything that, you know, hidden that I don't see, I think we can offer our future, you know, people that join in to see how a much luxurious opportunity and a utopia food that will be continued as part of the regimen that we already have. Paul from New York, thanks again.
Thanks, Paul. Is there somebody else who would like to share?
Vanessa.
Or ask a question? Go ahead, Vanessa.
Thank you so much, Elaine, and to all of our panelists. Wonderful workshop. Grateful to be here today and hear you all. The thing that keeps coming up for me throughout the entire workshop is I just keep hearing in my head a quote I read once, which was, surrendering is just joining the winning side. And I really love that because I do believe it's actually true. Surrendering is how we win. It's just one of the many paradoxes in program that I love, that I felt like I had to control everything and self-reliance would get me what I wanted until I absolutely exhausted myself trying to fix it all on my own. It was only when I finally came into 12-step recovery and finally surrendered that I actually found what I was looking for all my life, which was freedom. And the other thing that I was thinking about is another paradox that I love is that when we first come in to see how it feels like, you know, it's so laid out, it's so structured and disciplined. The food plan is black and white, exactly how you need to work your tools, black and white. Everything is crystal clear, but it's a lot. So a lot of times, you know, it's like gulp. But also, it feels like it's too much. It feels like a cage, okay? So seeing how is going to force me to do all these things, and it's going to feel like a prison. Well, the fascinating thing for me is that my easier, softer way, somebody's unmuted, my easier, softer way in a former 12-step food program was to do it my way. You know, I would do some of the tools and recommendations, but I wouldn't do them all, and that did not work because I can't make it an easier, softer cool. way. That doesn't work for me. So in my second relapse, I found CHOW, and it's amazing because, yes, with surrender, honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness coming in and surrendering to the program when I was at my most desperate, I just said, I will do anything. And I started working CHOW as it's written. And what sounds like a cage is actually the framework and the foundation of my life today that allows me to have freedom one day at a time. And it is that that gives me wings. So the program is a miracle. Being abstinent one day at a time is a miracle. Any kind of emotional, spiritual, mental recovery is a miracle. Physical, too. And it's because of the black and white, thank you, Lane, that I've been freed. So thank you for letting me share, and I pass. Thank you all for your service.
Thanks, Vanessa. If you would like to share, press star 6 to unmute or ask a question.
Hi, Lane. This is Lynn H. in Pennsylvania. I'd like to ask a question.
Go ahead, Lynn.
And thank you for this this program. Very good. My question is, what advice do the panelists have for somebody who's had slips? And I know this is, I'm talking about me, of course. I know that this is the easier, you know, this is the best way. I don't want to go to the easier, softer way if it's defined as going off the program. I came into this program when I was 64, and so for decades, I ate the easier, softer way, and I did get to my goal in a year, and I thank God for that. And though I had to tweak my goal number, I'm still living in a normal body. And I love See How. I love the relationships I've made. But there's times when I've slipped that I have felt shame. Not from anybody in the program, but from my own inner voice. So, you know, I'm in a good place now, but I know, or at least I sense there's people out there who just need encouragement, you know, and not to give up, you know, and not to go back. I don't want to go back, and I'm not going back. So that's my question. Thanks.
Thanks, Lynn. So this great question is, panelists, do you first have any advice on how to help people get firm footing? How do we get firm
Carlisa,
footing?
Carlisa.
Go for it.
Carlisa would love.
Okay.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you, Lynn, for the question. It's certainly a place I've been. And I think that whether we're just beginning the process of recovery from compulsive eating, whether we are 5 years in, 10 years in, 20 years in, the question that I really hear is, how do I confront my compulsive eating disease every day? Because once I got to maintenance, I thought that all my life problems would be solved. I mean, after all, hadn't I been fat all my life, and that was because of some, you know, that was the cause of all my problems according to culture. Right? Certainly had a pretty face, I had a quick mind, but I just weren't fat. So when I got there to my weight maintenance and all my problems weren't resolved, imagine how unhappy I was. So what I started to do, and I have heard many other people start to do, it was like press the line of what can I eat in this eating plan of ours. That is, you know, doesn't really trigger me, but, you know, I can get as much as I can or want every day. That thinking, I had to learn to identify as compulsive eating behavior. Because what that thinking did gins up in me was this whole cycle that I tried to talk about in my original pitch. It started me on this eating with guilt thinking. Okay, well, you're not supposed to really think about it like that, and you're really, that's the diet mentality, and if you pick up, you're going to have to tell you, all of that started that guilt gin again, and that guilt gin, G-I-N, it causes toxicity in my mind and body. So I'm going to tell you what my dear sponsor says to me and many others I've heard. It's just keep at it. Whether you pick up or not, just resolve, tell your sponsor, get a sponsor you can talk to honestly, tell your outreach crew, look, I'm suffering here, you got to help me. go to double down on your meeting. Really, meetings help me. We'll listen to the workshop. Just I have to immerse myself back, and I'm trying to give practical suggestions, back into the center of the herd. Because my first love and lover has been food, and I will go back to food if I get into fear and doubt for ease and comfort. Pat.
Susie, did you want to jump in here?
No, I was just going to make a statement, and it's just my opinion.
Please.
First of all, thank you, Elaine, for organizing such a wonderful, I mean, these words can't describe it. I don't know why everybody doesn't come on to this, you know, that's on PhoneBridge. You know, it's just wonderful. I learn everything that I need to hear. I just wanted to talk about the speakers. Thank you, everybody. I'd like to talk about the paradoxes. This is what gets me through. From weakness, which is adversity, comes strength. We forgive to be forgiven. We give it away to keep it. We die to live. We suffer to get well. We surrender to win. From darkness comes light. From dependence, we found independence. Our strength lies on our dependence upon God. One of our greatest strengths is to admit our weakness. And what else can I think of? I just quickly wrote, it is also through adversity that strength is born. And I just wanted to say that helps me. You know, the paradoxes help me every day. Thank you.
Thank you, Susie. If there's somebody else who would like to contribute to the question, how do you get firm footing back?
Hi, Elaine. This is Ginger. May I share on this topic?
Please. Please, Ginger.
Okay, and I would like to thank you and what wonderful, okay, that's an opinion. I'd like to thank all the panelists for their service and sharing their experience and strength and hope, because I know that I couldn't do this without you, without them, and I'm grateful. And so, you know, one of the things, and I am on day, I think, 105 or 106 of a recommitted abstinence after 10 years, a month, and a handful of days. And I'm very grateful that when I decided to be honest and say that my food was getting really sloppy, I'm really grateful that, you know, I was advised to say that on the meeting. So, you know, in our PhoneBridge meetings, when we say, you know, are there any people who are, you know, recommitting, whatever, and it's like, yeah, it's me. You know, and it was quite humbling for me to have to say that, because I thought I was so secure in my abstinence. And so people called me up and congratulated me for being honest, and it didn't feel good at first. But then I got it. And so one of the things that I do when I reach out is, one of the things I like to do, and it was mentioned, is when I attend a meeting, I like to be on my computer and writing down who is sharing, what number, what did they say of interest, what, you know. And then when I make my outreach calls, I try to call those people back, because then I have a conversation already established, because I'll, you know, we'll get to talk about them. That's what someone else said, too. And you know, reaching out to others, we have a lifeline, and it doesn't matter how crazy life can get. It doesn't matter. We don't have to pick up. And that is such a gift to have that. It is such a gift to know that people have gone through cancer, you know, childbirth, adoption, losing a spouse, losing a significant other, losing a parent, and they're still abstinent. And that's what I want. And service is also so important in my recovery. And, you know, I like to ask my, and you can't, okay, when you are sponsoring, how do you get your sponsees to do service? By modeling and by asking them. So what service are you doing? And if it's in the beginning, you read at meetings, you identify at meetings, you talk in the fellowship time after the meeting. You know, when you get your 7 days, you start sharing at the meetings because you have something of value to share. Please don't think that you're not important and that, oh, what I have to share, people won't find useful. I can guarantee you that you will, and I can guarantee you that if you leave your number, people will call you back. And I'm kind of surprised. It's very rarely when I call someone that they won't call back. But if they do, you know what? If they don't, it's okay. It's okay, too. I can't have expectations. But I love that I've met so many people face-to-face on this phone line, on these phone lines, through conventions, assemblies, workshops. And being of service at those things helps really establish a bond. And it's so much fun to be. You know, we're not a glum lot in this program, and we're here to help each other. So thank you so much for organizing this and being here, and thank you, Elaine, for letting me share.
Thank you, Ginger. We have time for one more share on the topic of how do you get firm footing back.
Hey, this is Shannon in Florida. And compulsive eater, and definitely for me, this kind of sounds a little like self-sabotage. And I know I have struggled with that through all of the diets that I had gone through, just all the time, all the people. Any of those things can put me into, oh, I'll just pick one of these up. Or I'll just eat this or that I have not committed it to. And today, I mean, somebody could just be talking about some of what they're eating, and that'll start my wheels in my head going, ooh, yeah, that does sound like a good idea. What? I'm still super new in this program, but these meetings, everything that we've been saying throughout this definitely helps. And I am, as far as I can be, in service, in the meetings, and weighing and measuring, and have a fantastic relationship with my sponsor, and yet this still kind of goes through my mind as a good idea. But for me, that is about, I'm still hanging on to something. And there is something that I need to quiet down, you know, the rigor more of the day, so that I can really listen to what's hurting inside of me and be able to translate that in a way that I can truly let it go and let God truly forgive either myself or others or whatever that might look like for me. Because just like everybody said, if you're doing the service, if you're making those calls, if you're going to your meetings, if you're doing each and every one of those tools and still going out there and picking and nibbling and doing these other things that you're saying, oh, it's okay, I think I can handle it for this moment because I have this great structure and I have the ability to come back whenever I want. You know, we're starting to take that for granted for ourselves. And for me, that's what it sounds like when I hear about flipping or when my mind starts to go in that direction and I can't stop those little mini things or those little ounces that are going over. It's something that you're probably hanging on to. It's something to just let go and let God, and I appreciate you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Shannon. And thanks all of our panelists and all of the listeners who indulged my question.
Where is the magic bullet, my fairy godmother, and the ruby slippers, and I kicked my heels 3 times, and I found it in this room. I want to thank Mary, Gila, Carlisa, Karen, Stu, and Shannon for your outstanding contributions today. My wish for all of you is that you will go forward with peace, goodness, blessing, grace, loving kindness, and compassion as we go forward today. Thank you again, all of our panelists, for being here. I will, I'm going to stop the recording and we'll say the Serenity Prayer together.